And this is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Sean, you ready to go on this Friday? You got all your stuff for the 2 o'clock hour?
I have everything I need to make this show a success.
Yes! Yes!
An even greater success than it already is, I should say. But I would, but
Thank
I won't.
You.
But I won't say that.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. And then Nicole and I were just talking off the air. We just heard in CBS News that Kim Kardashian has just filed for divorce from Kanye West. And here's my thing on that, because I see it, that's all over Twitter, and everybody's talking about it, and everybody's goofing on it. And all I heard from the CBS story was they have 4 kids, and that is so unbelievably sad to me. Anytime, I don't know why people goof on that. Just either ignore them or leave them alone. But don't make fun of divorce, because the breakdown of the family is the number one problem in America today. And you want to solve most of our crises in America? You want to solve the poverty and homelessness and drug addiction and divisiveness? Restore the family. Is that too heavy? Am I the only person, Nicole, who takes that heavy a take on Kim Kardashian and Kanye?
Maybe on this particular couple, but no, I think it's just because maybe it's better for those kids not to be around Kanye because he's kind of lost his mind, but I mean, no, it's never a good thing that somebody's getting divorced.
No, that's my thing. I would choose to either ignore it or just try to talk about supporting families than to goof on that. But that's just me.
It's weird that it's breaking news for everybody. I mean, why is that going out on every single alert? It's crazy.
I've got a bunch of alerts on my phone, and I have a pretty high threshold for what gets, you know, classified as a, you know, push alert on my phone. I don't get a million of them. So, but yeah, that one's the big story apparently right now. But also, yeah, mental illness, because the guy's obviously, I mean, he's even said he's bipolar, and that's not a good thing either. And making fun of somebody just because they're a celebrity, and I know everybody hates Kanye because he supported Trump, or not everybody, but half of America hates him because he supported Trump, too. So I guess that's the only reason everybody wants to goof on that. Okay, let's get to some local news. And important. Now, here is something I'm going to goof on. There is an effort to ban the helmet law. You know, everybody in King County, you have to wear a bike helmet. And by the way, I'm not a fan of bike helmet laws. I would never, and I do a lot of bike riding, I would never get on a bicycle without a helmet, because I've seen too many people and the effects of traumatic brain injury and all of that. Now, I've never crashed my bike. I've never clunked my head on the concrete while bike riding. But so I personally, I will always wear a helmet. But I don't like helmet laws, because I think that's a personal choice issue. I don't like seatbelt laws. I think that's a personal choice issue. But anyway, listen to this. In fact, let me just read to you the lead in the Seattle Times story that says we got to get rid of helmet laws because they are racist. Here's the lead to the Seattle Times story. In the fall of 2019, a white man spat on Edwin Lindo while he was riding his bicycle with a friend around Mercer Island. He recalled, "It gets on my jersey and I'm like, I can't believe this is happening right now." Lindo, who identifies as Central American Indigenous from Nicaragua and El Salvador, and his friend, who is black, viewed the encounter as a racist attempt to exclude them from the biking community. Okay. We found out from an Edmonds city councilwoman a few weeks ago that Edmonds is the most racist of places. And now apparently Mercer Island is also very racist, where you spit on people. First of all, if the guy is saying that's what happened, that's how the Seattle Times should report it. But the Seattle Times reported it as fact. A white man spit on Edwin Lindo while he was riding his bicycle. Now, to me, the better way to phrase that would be Edwin Lindo says or claims that a white man spit on him. I just don't know that you can state something like that as fact, because a lot of people say a lot of things to push some cause. But then, because then it is revealed that this guy Lindo, he knew black and brown people were treated differently while bike riding, taking transit, driving, and using other forms of transportation. So now they want to repeal all the bike helmet laws in King County. And he says, because helmets are not cheap, minority groups cannot afford bicycle helmets, and that's why they ride without helmets, and that they get punished and cited disproportionately. So then I look at this graph in the Seattle Times story. 75.9% of bike riders are white in this area. And white people get 72.9% of the tickets for no helmet. So that's sounds pretty proportional to me. And then they say that Black and Native American bike riders are cited disproportionately. We have 0.5% of the population is Native American, but they get 1.1% of the tickets. Again, that is such a small number. It is statistically invalid. And I guess that's what drives me crazy. But I'm a numbers guy, and I've always been fascinated, captivated, intrigued, and intellectually drawn to statistics. And when you start citing something in a news story as factual, when the margin of error is so great that a statistic is not valid. But it's also this, everything is racist these days. Bike helmet laws now are racist. And it's getting overplayed, okay? There's racism in society. But when you say that everything is racist, it delegitimizes the actual racism in society. If you're saying that bicycle helmet laws are racist, well, then I don't know how much else you say I can trust. But, you know, it's sound transit, buses. We cannot do fare enforcement on sound transit because it's racist. Everything is racist. Well, no. Sometimes there are just rules, laws, fares, F-A-R-E-S, not like Monroe and Puyallup. And you should pay the fare if you ride light rail. If you don't want to wear a helmet while biking, you're taking a chance because you're violating the law. Again, I don't like the law. But not every single thing in our society is racist. And it's a very silly story by the Seattle Times. Okay, now here's another one. You know, we talked a lot about the Black Lives Matter curriculum in all the local school districts the first week of this month. Now we have a story where a high school football coach who complained about the left-wing curriculum in his daughter's class. He complained to district officials about, he didn't like the Black Lives Matter curriculum. And I shared enough of it with you that, you know, I told you first week of this month that I had grave concerns with the curriculum that was being taught in our local school district, Seattle, Shoreline, North Shore, Bunch of local school districts. Well, this guy, he's a public high school football coach, and he was fired from his coaching job after complaining to school district officials about how left-wing his daughter's middle school class curriculum had gotten. And he's now filed a lawsuit. And this is what's really problematic. Public schools are government entities. And the First Amendment, it protects us from the government. It doesn't mean that I can say anything I want on the radio and Bonneville can't fire me. That's not what the First Amendment means. The First Amendment means I can go out on a public street corner and I can yell anything I want and the government can't silence me. But that's where I think it's really getting problematic in our public schools, because public schools are government entities. And when they silence people, when they tell you what you must say or what you can't say, then we have a problem, because then that is government trying to shut us up and shut us down. Hey, can you shut up and be shut down at the same time? That seems like opposite directions, now that I think about it. But and when you look at some of this curriculum, like Chris Rufo, the local community activist who's been on our show many, many times, Chris Rufo had a piece that he wrote earlier this week about the curriculum in one Philadelphia elementary school where the kids were ordered to free Angela Davis, to have a rally to free Angela Davis, who's the outspoken political activist from jail. Rufo got these whistleblower documents, and he spoke to a school source that corroborated the details. Angela Davis is a communist. She admits that. She was once jailed on charges of murder and then later freed. But at this school, they were teaching these kids about this, I think she was 60s, the 60s radical. And then the kids had to have a free Angela Davis from prison rally in the classroom. And they were forced to make signs that read, Black Power, Jail Trump, Free Angela, and Black Power Matters. And then they had to make mural commissions of Angela Davis and communist revolutionary Huey Newton. So when you have public schools teaching kids, our kids, how to be communists, and then a parent speaks out against it, and the parent can get fired from their public school job, that is the most insidious, the most evil kind of government that we can have. Because then the government is acting like communists. They are ignoring the First Amendment. They're shutting us down. And, you know, to force kids to make a jail Trump poster. What if there's a kid who likes the president? He was the president at the time that they did this rally. What if a kid doesn't want to be a little commie? And the school's making them do that. It's amazing. So Chris Rufo had this piece. They're forced to celebrate black communism, simulate a black power rally, and to support communism. Your tax dollars at work there. Okay, next up in the fastest 15. I didn't want to get off on all this race stuff here, but it seems to be kind of a theme. Another school wants white parents to reflect on their whiteness and to identify what kind of white they are. Let me explain. They sent this home with the kids. They asked the kids only of the Caucasian kids in the classroom. And they sent this home about the 8 white identities. And it can be anything from white supremacist, white voyeurism, white privilege, white benefit, white confessional, white critical, white traitor, or white abolitionist. And they asked the parents to identify, self-identify, what kind of white they are. And I would ask, is this bringing us together? Is this helping to solve any of the ills in society? And they described all of those for the parents so they could identify what they are. White supremacist, clearly marked white society that preserves names, values white superiority. In the middle was white privilege, may critique supremacy, but a deep investment in questions of fairness under the normalization of whiteness and the white rule. This obsession with all this stuff is the most divisive. And that's where, you know, you have to ask the question. Is this really helping bring us together, or is it desperately dividing us either more? And I know the answer, because that is what government wants. They want to divide us. They want to group us. I think that, you know, it's a very destructive trend to talk about people as groups instead of as individuals. But that's what's happening in our schools right now. And then you got this one. Finally, a somewhat happy story, I guess. Nicole, you have said many times that your all-time favorite entertainment personality is this woman here. Is that an accurate statement, Nicole, that Dolly Parton's your all-time favorite?
Okay. As an entertainer and just as a person, I just think she's awesome.
Okay. And I have no reason to disagree with that. She seems like a fine person. She was a great guest. Most people aren't going to be able to relate to this because I've gotten so old. I used to be the kid. Now I'm so old. But Dolly Parton would go on Johnny Carson. And she was a great guest. But that was back in the days where Johnny would make these, you know, really obvious double entendre jokes about her and her chest size and all of that. And she would laugh about it. And
she has the best sense of humor, especially about herself.
Oh, I mean, but talk about politically incorrect. Johnny Carson would be canceled today. He was revered as the greatest entertainer of his time. He would be canceled today. Anyway, the reason we're talking about Dolly Parton is the Tennessee legislature has a bill requesting that they erect a statue of Dolly Parton on the Capitol grounds. And Dolly Parton says no. She just came out and she said, given all that's going on in the world, I don't think putting me on a pedestal is appropriate at this time. She said she's honored and humbled by their intention, but she said, I'll try to do good work to make this great state proud. But she has no interest in them building a statue for her in Tennessee. And how rare is that from a showbiz person? I don't want the attention. I don't want the statue.
Would you want a statue of yourself? Erected in the station. I can just imagine that.
Yeah, let's see what the vote is there. Oh, man. good. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that Kyra will do that someday for me.
Yep, yep.
All right, that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. I mean, come on. I'm the most famous person to ever come out of Ballard High School, and I can't even get on their wall of fame.
And we don't like how he thinks.
Please. Like, I'm going to change my thinking for that. Okay, coming up next, we're going to talk. Who are we talking to next? We're talking to the business owner next?
Yes.
Okay, I lost my notes in front. Okay, this is really interesting. Have you thought about the moral dilemma that business owners have about, should I pay my rent when I could use an eviction moratorium? I had a business owner who reached out to us yesterday, and we'll talk to her about that coming up next. If you're listening to the show yesterday, I talked to a very respected business owner, CEO for many, many years in our region, who moved his business to Arizona because things have gotten so bad here. Another small business owner heard us talking and had another perspective to share. Her name's Wendy, and she joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. I appreciate you reaching out to us. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So one of the challenges of being a business owner, as you shared in your message to us, is this moral dilemma where you were shut down. Your business was shut down for several months. Is that correct?
Yeah, and we're still at 25% capacity.
Okay. Did you get any rent breaks during that time? What you talked about was interesting to me, Wendy, because it sounds like you have a moral dilemma that a lot of people are facing. You could take advantage of the rent moratorium, but you choose not to. Is that right?
Yeah, I choose not to just because, like, you had had a woman that you interviewed yesterday who was talking about owning business properties, like older buildings in Seattle, so that small businesses could, you know, afford rent and open. And so the landlord that I have is also one of those people that's, owned the property forever, local in Ballard. And so if they keep the rent really low and they do it, I think they keep the properties when they could sell them just so businesses, little businesses like mine, can open up and survive. So I felt like I didn't want to put them out by not paying rent to them because I know that, you know, they need to make money as well. So it's kind of a tricky situation. It's not a large corporation that owns the property I'm on, you know?
Yeah, well, and that's where I think everybody's facing a moral dilemma because your landlord, and I don't know, you know, what kind of zoning is in your neighborhood, but since the city council has basically said they want more density, they've upzoned almost the entire city, your landlord could probably sell that property, sell it to some condo developer, and it'd be what we have everywhere else, which is six or seven stories of apartments or condos with retail on the bottom. They could probably sell it. But maybe they like the, you know, they will accept less money so that they can keep some character in the city. And between landlords like yours and tenants like you, it's very interesting moral dilemma that everybody's facing right now.
Yeah, and I believe that, like the woman who was on the show yesterday said, I think that the problem is that with the tax increases as far as property taxes go, it's when the owners of these spaces are faced with this dilemma about what to do, and sometimes it's just going to come down to money, it's going to push them, unfortunately, in the direction of selling and tearing down. And then the new spaces that go up are apartments, which I don't know how many of those we need in the city, but I don't know anybody who likes them. And then it's small business spaces that are like 300 to 500 square feet below, and they're always a little oddly shaped. So it's like, as this stuff goes up, they're just boxing out small businesses, what it feels like. I'm really starting to feel like, you know, that Seattle's not, doesn't seem like they're interested in keeping small businesses around. It seems like they kind of want to force all of us out and then bring in just like corporate whatever. And I'm in Crown Hill, and that's a cute little neighborhood. You know, Ballard was a cute neighborhood, Wallingford, Capitol Hill, you know.
You make such a great point. I don't think most people realize this. The people in power in Seattle, they talk all the time about caring about the little guy, caring about the working class, and almost every action they take attacks those people, attacks the working class, raises your taxes, makes it tougher and tougher to do business, and they claim to hate companies like Amazon, but Amazon gets fantastic tax breaks wherever they go because they have the power, the clout to negotiate that. You don't. And until we all realize that this is not about a government that wants to help the working class, I think people are just a little delusional right now about, you know, the people who are in charge.
Yeah, Seattle's supposed to be this, I think that everybody's forgetting why people move to Seattle. We have so many cute little individual neighborhoods within, you know, 10 miles. You could travel through three cute distinct neighborhoods, and Crown Hill is one of those, and definitely it needed some repair. But, you know, I'm seeing the homeless population increasing, which has been causing, and I'm not saying homeless people like vandalize. I'm just saying, like, you know, we have people stealing our chairs, stealing our lights, and stealing stuff from out front. We have vandalism, not from homeless people necessarily, but just from people out to cause trouble. And we have a lack of police presence. So as a business owner, I mean, I very rarely go through one day where there's not something, some fire that I'm putting out because we have lack of police presence, because, you know, everything's getting torn around. So we have, you know, torn down around us. So we have vacant buildings everywhere, which encourages more of that. And then I've talked to a lot of the homeless people in the neighborhood that are local Seattleites who are now homeless because they've torn down affordable housing and replaced it with $1,600 apartments, you know?
Well, yeah, but not only that, but they raise the taxes on the landlords, and the landlords pass that along to the tenants. So government is the primary reason housing's unaffordable around here. In Seattle, yep, more than any place in the country, Syracuse University study, government adds more to the cost of housing in Seattle than any city in the United States of America. Well, and I'll just finish with this, Wendy. I don't know if you know this. I grew up in Ballard. I always think of the heart of Crown Hill, the hub, as being 80th and 15th. And on the southwest corner was Crown Hill Hardware, just a great funky hardware store. And then if you go down towards Ballard High School, where I went to school, there was nothing but funky little businesses on and buildings on both sides of 15th. I drove that stretch of road a couple of weeks ago, and it's like there's just this giant wall of these seven-story condos down both sides of the street, and it was really sad and depressing to me, because the city council that talks all the time about how much they care, all they want is more tax dollars from the developers who want to homogenize the city. That's my view.
And one last thing I'll say, a lot of the developers aren't local. So it's like there's something to be said for people that purposely moved here, were born and raised. A lot of developers don't live in Seattle at all. And that's not even getting into the construction issues that we've had with clients not being able to get into our parking lot to park. And we're at 83rd and 15th. We used to be at 73rd and 15th. And I picked Crown Hill for a reason. Like, I thought it was like an up-and-coming neighborhood, but not in the sense of literally up-and-coming with large buildings,
right.
You know. Yeah. But, yeah, hopefully it all gets straightened out. But I think the government needs to remember a really important fact, and that's that, like, middle-class people pay a lot of the taxes. I'm a middle-class business owner, and as a business owner in Ballard, I should be able to afford to live where I own a business. And that's the other thing. What happened to being able to afford to live near where you work? You know, you shouldn't have to
absolutely
commute in.
Well, look, I agree with everything you're saying. There is an absolute war on the middle class by the Seattle politicians, because they want people in poverty, because that makes government even more necessary in the lives of those people. That, you know, we'll take care of you. You can't take care of yourself. Government will take care of you. And that's what they want to instill as much as possible. Of that, I am certain.
I totally agree.
All right. It's really nice talking with you. Appreciate you reaching out to me and coming on with me today.
Yep. Great talking to you, too.
All right. There goes Wendy. And by the way, her business is Wendy's Barber Lounge in Crown Hill. If you want to go say hi to her and get a cut. But I appreciate her coming on after reaching out to us like that. All right. We have lots more to come straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Hate getting older. And I really do. I struggle with it. You know, a lot of things that I used to love doing, I just can't do anymore. Since, you know, I got my knee replaced. I can't play basketball, which was my great passion in life. But But there's only one way to avoid getting older. And the alternative isn't very good. So I'll try to accept it as best I can. But that's why my heart was touched. I think that maybe the most underrated athlete of our time right now is Serena Williams. I mean, she is phenomenal. 24 major championships, still competing at the highest level at age 39. And I'm a little more dialed into tennis because my wife and all three of my daughters are tennis players. And so I just think Serena Williams is phenomenal. So a couple nights ago, she was at the Australian Open. She's in the semifinals. I mean, age 39, still, you know, one of the four greatest in the world if you make the semis. And she lost to Naomi Osaka, who's one of the, you know, great young players of our time. And I watched this post-match press conference with Serena Williams, and the whole time she had tears in her eyes. She was being very gracious to all the questioners. You know, what went wrong? Why did you make all these mistakes? But she had tears in her eyes the whole time, and she tried to just be gracious and go on, but you could tell that this was horribly upsetting to her. And it was something that I found very relatable, that when you realize the time has caught up to you in physical pursuits, it's hard because there's nothing you can do about it. Absolutely nothing. So anyway, here's how the post-match press conference ended with her.
I don't know if I ever say farewell, I wouldn't tell anyone. So.
Oh, and you know what? Let me set this up a little better. They said as you were walking off the court, you kind of tapped your heart and waved to the crowd. And they said, you know, was that a farewell to the people of Melbourne? And this is what she said.
I don't know if I ever say farewell, I wouldn't tell anyone. So.
Last couple questions in the room, please. Yeah, Craig. Then.
Julie, you're saying about the unforced errors through the match. Considering how well you've played to get to this stage, what do you feel caused that? Or is it just one of those bad days at the office?
I don't know. I'm done.
And then she just said, say, I'm done, and walked out of the press conference. It was not a rude act in the slightest. It was just somebody who realized the time has caught up with her. And I think that's why, you know, people are just so amazed, and rightly so, with Tom Brady, who's competing in that most physical of sports at age 43. Pretty amazing. All right, good. Check the news for you. And then the Big Lead at 2 is coming up next.